Historically, if you wanted to paint someone experiencing like profound spiritual peace, you basically painted a statue.
Right, exactly. Very rigid.
Yeah, like if you look back at Byzantine icons or, early Renaissance portraits of saints, the subjects are almost always completely rigid.
They're flawless, unblinking.
Totally solemn. And I mean, it's a beautiful aesthetic, but it often feels like the person on the canvas is just holding their breath.
Yeah, because the underlying assumption in a lot of that classical art seems to be that true spirituality requires an escape.
An escape from the physical world.
Exactly, an escape into this sterile, motionless perfection. But today, we're looking at an artist who realized that true, living spiritual peace actually looks much more like a mess.
Which is such a radical departure from that classical stillness we were just describing.
It really is, because trying to capture a living, breathing internal state, something as invisible and, well, fluid as human consciousness, and forcing it into a static, highly polished physical form.
It usually kills the very vitality you were trying to portray.
Right. When an artist actively leans into the instability of a moment, that is when the artwork actually stops you in your tracks.
Which brings us to the centerpiece of today's deep dive. We are looking at the written notes and visual philosophies of the artist Jairo Duke.
Yes, and we're focusing specifically on an extraordinary painting of his titled Varangi.
Right, which is part of a broader collection he calls Trastio Pintura Artistica.
And our mission today isn't just to describe a painting to you.
No, we are going to explore how Duke uses specific chemical properties of paint, color optics, and framing to create this profound statement on human consciousness.
We are talking about how to construct a defensible sense of peace in a world that feels completely chaotic for all of us.
And Duke's notes offer this incredibly rare window into the mechanics of creation.
They really do. He meticulously breaks down the causality of his art, much of which he works on in his studio out in Whittier, California.
Oh, right, Whittier.
Yeah, and from that studio, he explains not just what is happening on the canvas, but the underlying philosophical necessity behind every single technical choice he makes.
Okay, let's unpack this, starting with the immediate visual architecture of the
Let's
piece.
do it.
So, picture a portrait that originates from a real photograph taken near the International Society for Krishna Consciousness Temple.
Often known as the ISKCON Temple.
Right, the ISKCON Temple in Laguna Beach. And the canvas features a specific devotee.
But Duke immediately clarifies a crucial distinction in his notes here.
Yeah, he says this is not meant to be a documentary photograph painted in acrylic.
Exactly. The individual is the starting point, but Varangi is engineered to function as a universal symbol.
A symbol of what, exactly?
Well, Duke is trying to capture a specific frequency of human existence. He calls it plena presencia.
Plena presencia, like full presence.
Right, a state of full absolute presence. It is a visual representation of living from a place of joy, spiritual discipline, and an active daily communion with nature.
And to pull that off, he makes this really fascinating compositional choice with the framing.
The way he positions the subject.
Yeah, because he doesn't paint the subject in a dark, enclosed temple. He frames the subject looking outward with this massive, wide-open view toward the sea.
And he explicitly states that the marine horizon isn't just a scenic backdrop to, like, make the colors pop.
Right, the ocean functions mechanically as a metaphor for the expansion of consciousness itself.
What's fascinating here is the dialogue created between the background and the subject.
Because the ocean has that constant, unending rhythm.
Yes, it's perpetual motion.
Yeah.
And in the painting, that oceanic rhythm acts as a mirror to the expression on the subject's face.
Right, because the subject is looking out at something entirely off canvas, something we viewers cannot see at all.
But Duke notes that through the posture and the gaze, we intuit this unseen focal point as a promise.
A promise, wow. And that fundamentally changes how a viewer interacts with the art.
How so?
Well, think about looking through an open window versus staring at a blank wall. If you paint a portrait of someone staring blankly at a brick wall, the viewer's eye, and by extension, their mind stops at the brick.
The psychological journey hits a dead end.
Exactly. But by framing the subject against this infinite marine horizon, looking toward an unseen promise, the composition practically forces your own mind to expand outward alongside the subject.
You find yourself trying to see what they see.
Right. But the expression itself is what really subverts that historical trope we talked about earlier. Duke notes the subject has a distinct smiling gesture.
A smile.
Yeah. In traditional religious art, smiling is rarely the go-to expression for devotion. It's usually this stoic, detached gaze.
Right.
So why does the Krishna consciousness philosophy specifically lend itself to this joyful expression?
Duke addresses this tension beautifully. He explains that within this specific smile, there is immense devotion, but there is also a profound sense of freedom.
A sense of freedom.
Yeah, he describes it as not a closed faith, but a faith that breathes.
A faith that breathes. That completely redefines the concept of spiritual discipline.
It really does. In many historical contexts, devotion is portrayed as a restriction, you know?
Like locking yourself away in a monastery, denying the senses, shutting out the world.
Exactly. But this smile proves that the discipline is not a burden. It is an expansive, joyous liberation.
Here's where it gets really interesting, though. Because a philosophy of freedom demands a physical medium that doesn't feel like a cage.
Right. The materials have to match the message.
You cannot paint a faith that breathes using a technique that visually suffocates the subject. The philosophy of that joyful smile demanded a completely different physical approach to the canvas itself.
And the transition from the conceptual to the material execution is where Duke's genius really shows. He specifically chose to work with acrylics for this piece.
And the choice of acrylic over, say, traditional oil paint, that completely changes the mechanics of the artwork.
It changes everything. Because oil paint takes forever to dry.
Right, which allows an artist to endlessly blend the colors until they look like smooth glass.
But acrylics dry incredibly fast.
And that rapid drying time is exactly what Duke leverages, right?
Yes. It forces the artist to work with immediacy. He uses what he calls opaque and gestural layers.
Because the paint sets so quickly, you can literally see the physical sweep of his arm.
The flick of his wrist, just trapped right there on the texture of the paint. It preserves the raw kinetic energy of the artist's body in real time.
It makes me think of looking through overlapping panes of stained glass.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah, because when he talks about layering these luminous acrylics, it's not just flat color. Light physically passes through the translucent upper layers of acrylic and then bounces off the opaque layers underneath.
And that optical depth is what gives the canvas that breathing quality we were talking about.
And we see this heavily in his color theory, too. He relies on these dominant shifting blues that unfold across the canvas.
Right, in varying temperatures from the sky down into the water.
But those color temperatures are critical to the psychology of the painting.
Absolutely. In color theory, cool colors like blues and pale greens visually recede from the viewer.
They pull back.
Yeah, they pull back, creating a sense of infinite receding space.
Mm-hmm.
Duke uses these receding cool temperatures to engineer what he calls an expansive serenity.
So the background physically feels like it is opening up?
Exactly.
But if the whole painting were just receding, cool blues.
The subject would feel like a ghost.
Right. They would feel detached from reality, floating in this cold, ethereal space.
So to prevent that detachment, he creates a deliberate optical clash.
An optical clash.
Yeah. He contrasts those expansive cool blues with highly saturated warm tones in the skin and the clothing of the subject.
Oh, because warm colors, your oranges, your earthy reds, they do the exact opposite of cool colors.
Right, they visually advance toward the viewer.
They pull the eye forward, so you have the background infinitely expanding backward while the human subject is pulling powerfully forward into the viewer's space.
It creates this vital bodily counterpoint.
It's a mechanical way of anchoring all that high-minded, airy spirituality right back down into the heavy sensory experience of having a physical human body.
The spirituality in Varanki is not happening in some distant, abstract realm that you can only reach by abandoning your body.
It is happening in the flesh.
Yes, it was happening in the immediate sensory experience of the world. The divine is found in the warmth of the skin and the physical reality of the moment.
I just love how the color theory supports that. But I have to admit, I want to push back on one of his specific technical choices here.
Which one?
I am still hung up on the brush strokes. Because if I am an artist commissioned to paint the ultimate state of spiritual peace, my instinct is still to smooth everything out.
You want no rough edges.
Right. I want it perfectly blended so the viewer feels no friction. But Duke does the exact opposite.
He really does.
His notes emphasize that his brush strokes are highly visible, almost messy, especially in the rendering of the sea and the hair. He intentionally prioritizes frantic movement over a polished finish.
And that bothers you.
Well, I just wonder, how does making a painting intentionally unstable communicate peace? Wouldn't that just make it look anxious?
That is such a good observation, and it raises an important question about our fundamental definition of peace.
What do you mean?
We often falsely equate peace with stillness or an absence of stimuli.
Like sensory deprivation.
Right. But Duke is actively rejecting the idea that peace means stopping the world. He explicitly states in his notes that he wanted to avoid any excessive solemnity.
He didn't want the painting to feel like a dusty museum exhibit.
Precisely.
Yeah.
He wants the pictorial matter itself, the literal polymer emulsion of the paint, to remain unstable and changing.
So he wants the medium to match the mind.
Exactly. The reason he traps that kinetic, messy energy on the canvas is because that is the most accurate representation of human consciousness.
Because our minds are not polished pieces of unmoving marble.
No, they are weather systems. Yeah. They are constantly shifting, receiving sensory input, and reacting to the environment.
Oh, wow. So a flawlessly smooth painting is actually a lie.
It is. It's an artificial state that just doesn't exist in human nature.
By keeping the brushstrokes chaotic and visible, he is painting the actual frequency of a living mind.
For Duke, transcendence does not manifest in rigid, untouchable perfection. It manifests in the messy, shifting reality of the everyday.
The everyday.
Yeah, he says transcendence is found in the wind, in the changing light, in the sudden burst of laughter.
And that requires visible, rhythmic brushstrokes.
Yes. He even discusses the facial ornaments on the subject, the specific dots and marks of the devotee.
Right.
He paints them not merely as cultural identity signs, but as active rhythmic strokes that visually connect the deeply intimate life of the subject with the broader rituals of their community.
Everything on that canvas is in perpetual motion.
Everything.
True peace, then, isn't the absence of movement. It's the ability to find a harmonious frequency within the movement.
That is exactly it.
That is a brilliant way to use the physical limitations of acrylic paint to argue a philosophical point. The medium truly is the message here.
And that philosophy of finding harmony within movement extends far beyond the edges of this single canvas.
Oh.
Yeah, Duke makes it very clear in his writings that Varangi is part of a much larger social and philosophical context.
Which brings us out of the solitary portrait and into the community, because the subject of Varangi is not a hermit living alone in a cave.
Not at all.
This painting is a profound recognition of a specific spiritual family. Duke's notes highlight the small group of devotees gathered around the leadership of someone named Tuka at the Laguna Beach Temple.
He is spotlighting a collective lifestyle rooted in Krishna consciousness.
Right.
According to Duke's observations, this community's existence revolves around the intentional care of the body, the cultivation of shared joy, and maintaining a deeply respectful symbiotic relationship with nature.
You know, when you read descriptions of a community entirely focused on peace and shared joy, there is a very specific, cynical reaction that tends to bubble up in the modern, stressed-out brain.
I know exactly what you're going
to
say.
The word naive immediately comes to mind.
Yep.
It's so easy for someone grinding through a 60-hour work week, constantly bombarded by terrifying news alerts, to look at a joyful devotee on a beach and think, well, must be nice to just ignore how bad the real world actually is.
And that cynicism is exactly what Duke is targeting with this exhibition.
He is.
Yes. He paints this community to fiercely defend their choices against that exact accusation. He explicitly argues that these forms of living in the world are neither marginal nor naive.
Okay.
He describes this lifestyle as deeply defensible and replicable.
So what does this all mean? When he says defensible and replicable, he is arguing that this isn't some fragile fantasy camp for a privileged few who are hiding from reality.
Right.
He is saying this is a logically sound, highly valid, and repeatable architecture for constructing a human life, even in the modern age.
Which perfectly brings us to the overarching title of his entire collection.
Tristio.
Yes, Tristio. It is a wonderfully loaded term. In traditional contexts, especially when dealing with sociological themes in art or the news cycle, Tristio implies a physical move or a displacement.
Right, like being uprooted.
Yeah, we almost always associate displacement with negative external forces.
Right.
Conflict, economic hardship, being forced out of your home, or a turbulent protest.
It usually implies a total loss of control. You're being moved against your will.
But Duke completely subverts the definition of displacement here. In the context of this exhibition, the displacement is not physical. It is an inner search.
An inner displacement.
Yes. He is advocating for a voluntary internal displacement.
I love this concept so much. Think of it like a mental moving day.
A mental moving day, yeah.
If you have ever moved from one apartment to another, you know that packing forces you to evaluate everything you own.
You have to make choices.
You have to actively decide what useless junk you're going to throw in the dumpster and what is actually valuable enough to carry into your new space.
Right.
And Duke Strastio is asking you, the viewer, to do that with your internal worldview. It's an invitation to pack up your cynicism, your burnout, and your doom-scrolling anxiety, tape up the box, and leave it on the curb.
Leave it behind.
Yeah. You actively relocate your own mind to a space of presence and gratitude.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the most vital nuance of Duke Strastio is that this mental moving day does not require you to pretend the outside world is perfect.
It doesn't ask you to be oblivious.
No, not at all. This inner displacement does not deny the brutal complexity, the noise, or the stress of modern society. It doesn't ask you to close your eyes.
What does it ask then?
Instead, it stubbornly insists on the possibility of inhabiting that exact same messy, complicated world, but choosing to do so with harmony and meaning.
It is an act of absolute rebellion.
It really is.
To look dead on at a chaotic, hyper-connected, anxious world and actively choose to cultivate a state of expansive serenity anyway, it's saying, I see the mess, I acknowledge the noise, but I'm choosing the wind, the light, and the laughter.
And that circles us right back to why the painting physically has to breathe.
Oh, right.
Because if the faith portrayed was closed off, if Duke had painted the canvas perfectly smooth, totally static, and deeply solemn,
it would falsely imply that achieving peace requires building a fortress to shut the world out.
Exactly. By utilizing active gestural brushstrokes and framing the subject open to the endless rhythm of the sea, Duke proves that true peace is about opening yourself up to the frequency of the world without allowing it to destroy you.
It's a phenomenal framework for interacting with art, and frankly, it's an essential survival mechanism for modern life.
I completely agree.
Which brings the focus of this entire deep dive directly onto you listening right now. We live in an era where the default state is sensory overload.
It's unavoidable.
Between political polarization, economic anxiety, and the constant barrage of information in our pockets, the complexity of the world is deafening.
And the natural human response to that level of noise is either total dissociation, just checking out completely, or adopting a thick armor of irony and cynicism just to get through the day.
But Jared Duke's Ferengi offers us a blueprint for a third option. He offers the mechanics for a defensible inner peace.
A peace that isn't fragile.
Right, that isn't naive, and that doesn't require you to stick your head in the sand. It is a peace anchored deeply in the immediate, tangible, sensory experiences available to us right now.
The literal warmth of the sun on our skin.
The physical temperature of the air in our lungs, the unending rhythm of the environments we walk through every single day.
He proves through his art that the spiritual realm and the physical sensory realm are not enemies at war with each other.
No.
They fundamentally require each other to exist.
So let's quickly recap the incredible mechanics we've uncovered in Jared Duke's work today.
Let's do it.
We started with the architecture of the canvas, how framing a subject against an infinite marine horizon acts as an open window, forcing our own consciousness to expand outward toward an unseen promise.
Then we explored the chemistry and color theory of his acrylics.
Right, learning how receding cool blues and advancing warm skin tones create a profound bodily presence.
We discovered how his fast, messy, gestural brushstrokes intentionally capture the chaotic vitality of the human mind, proving that peace is found in rhythm, not static perfection.
And finally, we saw how the communal joy of Krishna consciousness exemplifies the philosophy of Trastio.
The radical internal moving day where we actively choose to pack up our cynicism and inhabit a complex world with meaning.
It truly is a masterclass in making the invisible architecture of the human mind entirely visible.
It is breathtaking. And it leaves us with something incredibly practical to chew on as we navigate our own chaotic weeks.
Yeah, so we want to leave you with this final provocative thought. Think back to that open window, that expansive ocean horizon Duke painted.
The subject is looking outward toward an unseen promise that anchors their profound sense of joy.
This raises an important question for you. What is the unseen promise that anchors your personal sense of inner peace?
If you were to orchestrate your own mental moving day, your own Trastiabel, what are the everyday sensory elements of light or wind or physical connection that you would pack up and carry with you to ground yourself when the world gets too loud?
What is the exact frequency you are trying to tune into? It's a question worth answering. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you on the next one.